from Music City, Nashville, Tennessee.
Two guys fumbling their way through the music business so you don't have to. Here they are. It's Scott and it's Hino and the Music Row Show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Music Row Show. We are glad you're back with us.
Sorry, I'm doing some camera work here.
He's doing some CD dancing.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for hanging out with us. We'd love for you to join us in the conversation. Log on to facebook.com/themusicrowshow and chat along with us. And remember, you can always listen to past shows by the podcast page that you kids are all on.
That's right.
On themusicrowshow.com.
There you go. You can also, of course, hit us up on Twitter. And we'd love to hear from you during the show, at The Music Row Show.
Right. We're very active on Twitter.
Very active. We got it up right now.
Right.
Yeah.
Indeed.
So, Scott, why don't you introduce our guest here this hour?
It's hard to believe we've been doing this for 7 years.
Yeah.
Every day is like the first day. We are so excited.
It's like having Alzheimer's.
I know. No kidding. We are so excited to have Lisa with us tonight. You know, from singing at the top of her lungs on her childhood swing set.
Right.
And then hitting the stage as a teenager. She is a 20-plus year veteran as a professional musician. She's written songs for Reba, Terry Clark, Pam Tillis, not to mention many, many of her own hits, which have garnered her ACM nominations, two Canadian CMA Independent Song of the Year Awards, and three consecutive CCMA Independent Female Artist of the Year Awards. That's pretty cool. That's an award I've always strove for.
Good luck with that.
Thanks.
Good luck with that.
Earlier this year, she's released her latest single, Let It Burn, and then also Love Me If You Can has been released too, right?
Yes.
Which is the title track of the new CD. Is that correct or not?
No, but we can go with that if you want.
No. I want to be as accurate as possible. Is the new project not titled yet?
It's not titled yet.
Okay,
no.
So it hasn't been released, but it's produced by the one and only Carolyn Dawn Johnson.
Yes.
I got that part right?
You got it right.
Sweet.
You're doing well now.
We have a lot to cover, and I got to try to recover after this whole flame out there. It's a pleasure to say Lisa Brokop. Welcome to the Music Row Show.
Thank you.
Glad you're here.
Thank you so much. Pleasure to be here.
Nice. So then what was it like for you to be a 15-year-old girl hitting the road as a pro touring musician? I mean, looking back, did you miss out on any regular kid stuff or...
Yeah, well, looking back, I think that's crazy that I was out there on the road as a 15-year-old. You know, I have a daughter now, and
yeah.
There's no way she's going out there at 15. No way.
I was going to ask you about that.
You know, when you're 15, you don't think, boy, I'm sure awfully young to be in this business. You just
right.
want to go. I'm
right.
like, yeah, I'm going, and my parents let me go, and I wanted it so bad. I found out where Nashville was when I was like 8, 9 years old,
uh-huh.
and I was determined to go, and I wanted to be a country music star, so... Off I went at 15. I played a little guitar and a little piano, and I sang, and off I went.
I'm picturing you with a little Schroeder piano.
Yeah, a little tiny piano. I didn't play the piano very well. Actually, my first gig was a backup singer for another band, and I told them I played piano, but I, you know, it was a bit of a lie.
I
wasn't lying. I did play it. It just didn't sound that good.
Oh, well, yeah. Those are two different things.
Yeah.
But then, so then what kind of experiences did you, do you have anybody there protecting you when you were out on the road?
Yes, my very first road trip, my aunt came along with me. So yes, I didn't go out completely by myself. And so she needed a vacation. So she thought, yeah, I'll go. But she didn't realize that when the bus pulled in, it was not a big fancy Eagle Prevo. It was a 1963 yellow school bus.
Nice.
And we all piled in and my parents stood there with their mouths agape as
were the seats
away.
Still in it, or did they retrofit it?
Okay. Some of them were there, and then some were taken out, so we had room for our equipment in the back.
Okay.
You know,
we had
the whole PA
system. Well,
you felt
right at home, though, because it was a school bus.
Right. So it was like, hey, this is cool, and, you know, the little tiny seats, and we were traveling in Canada, so it was March,
mm-hmm.
and it was, I think, around 40 below a few times, and, you know, this thing was old, so occasionally it would break down, and things would freeze, and,
nice.
Go on and on.
But when you're 15, none of that matters.
When you're
right?
15, it's all a big romantic, oh, I'm on the road, yeah. I mean, I look back now and go, there's no way I would get on that bus now.
Perfect.
What do you think the benefits were of starting that early, and what do you think might, were there any challenges being that young?
Well, the biggest challenge for me was I was underage and I was playing a lot of nightclubs and they wouldn't let me sit in the main room. I had to sit in the kitchen on the break. So that was a big challenge as a 15-year-old. Oh, yeah. What? Wow. You won't let me in? You know, in a lot of ways, I was fortunate to start so young because, you know, I learned so much and I got to get out there early. But then at the same time, you know, I was very young. I didn't do a lot of things that regular 15-year-olds do, and which, you know, I don't know that I'd go back. If I could go back, that I'd change anything. But pros and cons, I would say.
Yeah.
With that, for sure. My as I said, my daughter, not going to happen.
Not going to happen.
She'll be 47 before she gets it. No.
That sounds perfectly reasonable. Yes. I have a daughter, too.
But then your
first single, though, Daddy Sing to Me.
Mm-hmm,
I mean,
that's
right. How old were you? 17 at that point? Or 16.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
so that actually became a top 10 song in Canada. How did that all come about for you?
You know, it was, I met some people through our organization. I'm from Vancouver, our organization in British Columbia. And I met different songwriters, producers, and people that were willing to help me. And I went in the studio and recorded this song called Daddy Sing to Me. And my mom was the person who would get up every morning to call the radio stations across Canada, what they call those trackers now, the people that call mm-hmm. up and work the song to mm-hmm. radio. And she would call them. She'd get up at 6 in the morning so she could reach the people on the East Coast at 9 and talk to them and say, hey, my daughter's new single just came out. And it ended up on the charts for 25 weeks.
Wow.
And, I mean, we didn't know anything about anything. I was just this young girl who really wanted to sing. And so, and there it was. And in Canada, we have this, the CanCon ruling. I don't know if you're familiar with, where they have to play a certain amount of Canadian music on the radio. So there wasn't back then, there wasn't a whole lot of really good or great recordings. You know, a lot of them were pretty bad. So mine was okay. So I got in there and I got a lot of play because of it. They had to play me. They
nice.
Needed something to play.
It sounded good and it
sounded okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Well, okay. So you've recorded several albums over the years. You've done a whole bunch. What part of the creative process, because you've done producing, songwriting, you do the whole thing. What parts are the parts that you enjoy the most, and what parts might be more of a challenge for you?
Well, I'm really not much of a producer. I mean, I've technically co-produced by, you know, helping the real producer, but I'm not really the person that goes in there, and I'm kind of still amazed by that process when the producers come in there and direct the band and say, well, you play this here and the guitar player plays that there. I love going in when all that's put together and I get in front of the microphone and it all just kind of gels together and this great huge sound comes out. Mm-hmm. That's the part I love. And I love the writing process. I love watching it go from guitar and a vocal on a work tape to this great big production. My favorite part is at the end when it's like, okay, the mixing's done, everything's down, and now we're going to sit in front of the great big huge speakers and we're going to play the whole thing and celebrate it. That's
right.
My favorite part.
That's your favorite part.
Yes.
When it's done.
When it's done.
When it's, so you're not as excited about all the little minutiae through the track process.
Yeah, yes and no. I mean, I do enjoy that too. I enjoy being in the studio and watching the musicians here in Nashville are just
the
best
incredible.
Of the best. And it amazes me still every time I see it that they hear a song once and they sit down and play this phenomenal thing. But yeah, I enjoy that, but I'm not really the producer type. I like to write them. And I love the live process. I love to be out singing live. That's my thing.
Okay.
You were talking about the big speakers. I just read an article with Tom Petty. Did you read that?
I don't
know. And he was saying that when they're all done, he goes and he gets a rental car and they listen on crappy speakers because he wants to hear how it sounds.
Yeah. Right.
And he gets really mad if somebody changes rental cars because they're like, no,
we got
to listen to the same
car.
Speakers.
Well, you know that a lot of people do that. My husband, Paul Jefferson, you know, Paul, he does the same thing. You go and I've done that, too. You go in the car. That's where you listen. Yeah. That's where most people hear a lot of their music.
A lot of studios will keep a set of really crappy, like some Radio Shack speakers just for that. To, you know, they of course going to sound great on the big, you know, $10,000 speakers, but then what does it sound like on transistor radio speakers?
Right.
And
if it still sounds good on that, you got a good
thing.
Then
you get something
good. Yeah.
Nice.
For sure.
So obviously music was your passion and your career choice from an early age. Mm-hmm. So how did you end up acting in a movie in Harmony Cats? How did that come about, and how did that help your music career?
That was such a fluke, I guess you could say. I was already, you know, had my single out at 16. I had a couple of singles out by the time the movie part came around. And my agents at the time, part of their company was an acting division. Okay. And so they said, hey, there's this movie happening here in Vancouver, and, you know, they need a country singer, a girl country singer. Do you want to go audition? I'm like, yeah, okay, sure. Yeah, that'd be fun. I've never done that before. So I go and I do this little audition and I sing a bit, and I didn't think, I'm not going to get the part. I'm not an actress. I don't, you know, this will just be a good experience, whatever. So then I get a call a few weeks later. Well, you got the part. And okay, so what exactly is it? Well, it's the lead female role.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Okay, off we go then. Yeah. So it was awesome. Yeah. I didn't realize that I would enjoy it as much as I did. I loved it. I heard that it had come down to, well, there was two people. There was the person who could sing me and not act very well. And then there was a better actor that couldn't sing as well. So they chose me, the singer.
No, you did great. I watched a bunch of it earlier today. It's out there on the internet. Yeah.
How did you watch it? I was trying to find it.
It's out there. Yeah.
Oh, I was trying to find it on YouTube.
Oh, it's probably not there.
It's not on YouTube, but I'll give you the link.
Okay. Cause I was looking for it. I could find was Harmony Cats is some disco band from the 70s too. An all-girl disco band. And I was going,
okay, I'm going to look that up.
Well, it's out there, and I watched about 10 minutes of it earlier today.
That's probably enough.
Yeah. It was like a summary. It was like clips from the whole movie from beginning to end.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Cool.
It's like cliff notes for the movies.
Yeah.
For,
yeah.
Wow. Perfect.
So. Wow.
So, okay, we're bouncing all over the place, but it's just because that's how we like to do
things. We've got ADD.
Sounds good. I do, too.
Because I'm really excited about the new thing, what you've done with Carolyn Don Johnson, mm-hmm. who I just adore.
Oh, yeah, me too.
And hopefully someday she's going to come to our show. Carolyn,
I bet she
are you
would.
Listening?
Hopefully.
Talk about the recording mm-hmm. process with her. What was different about these sessions, and what does she bring to the table as a producer?
Well, she is just awesome in every way. Mm-hmm. I've always loved her. Like you said, I've always loved her writing and her singing and performing, and always admired that. But I didn't realize that she was such a good producer. And it was suggested to me, hey, you know, Carolyn is doing a lot of producing these days. Maybe you might want to consider her. I went, oh, okay. So I called her up. I said, hey, Carolyn, let's have a coffee. And I have this little project I'm doing. And I talked to her, and she was willing to get on board. And she's one of the most positive, uplifting people I've ever met. She just knows how to bring the best out of everyone, even with the musicians. You know, I watched her go into the studio, the part that I don't really, you know, that's not my deal. She pulled all the musicians together that she thought would be great, and she directed each one and said, well, we need this and this. And she was just awesome. And then doing vocals, that was my favorite part. She worked me hard, I have to say. She worked me really hard.
Really?
And it was good. It's like she really challenged me.
So when you say that, for people who may not know, what does that mean when you're in the studio to be worked hard versus maybe a producer who doesn't?
Well, I've had producers before where they turn the microphone on and then they go golfing. And then I just sing.
Right. And they
don't care. Many years ago. Yeah. And then it's like, okay, that's great. And so... She would, you know, we'd sing it down a few times and she'd say, well, why don't you try this? Or why don't you try it with more emotion, or think about this while you're singing? But the way that she would say it to me was just always really positive, and I never felt like I was being beaten up, even though she did work me hard.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. She was, and I felt like I got some of the best vocals of my career working with her.
Excellent.
Wow. Yeah. Which is really cool.
Well, and it feels good when someone's making those suggestions, because you're thinking, wow, they're really paying attention to this.
Yes.
Yeah. They actually care about what I'm doing as much as I do.
That was it. She really cared. She was like, she put her whole heart and soul into it. And she's such an awesome vocalist. So it was like, you know, we're vocalists. That's our big thing. And every once in a while she'd sing something over the microphone and say, well, why don't you try it like this? And I go, God, that's really good. Why don't you
come in here? Yeah.
That was great.
Wow, that's awesome.
Change the idea.
Yeah.
It's a CDJ project now.
Oh, man. Well, listen, we need to take a quick break, but we're going to come back with a whole lot more of Lisa broke up here on the Music Row Show. But sponsor of this segment is Toyota of Cool Springs. Now, you may know Scott and I are both Toyota drivers, and we really love this dealership.
Yeah, and we're happy to have them on as a new sponsor because they have excellent deals, excellent experience. We love that they have a lifetime warranty with unlimited time and miles on every new car they sell, a three-day exchange policy, unlike many other dealerships. And you know what? They're low-key. They're friendly. It's just kind of a cool vibe in there.
Yeah, we love it. Toyota of Cool Springs. Go and ask for George. He's the owner. He'll take care of you. And on the web at toyotaofcoolsprings.com.
That's right. We're going to be back with more of Lisa Brokop here on the Music Row Show. Stick around.
I'm going to need all the king's horses, all the king's men, to help me put pieces back together again. Same old, same old, same feels like a cage that I'm in. What I need is more than just to shake it. Break it.
Oh, yeah. Welcome back to the Music Row Show. We are here with recording artist Lisa Brokop, and that's a tune of hers called Break It. Love that.
Thank you.
That's got a cool sound. I like that a lot.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I don't want it to stop. There we go.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, Hino. I know.
Yeah. No, it's all right. You know, we've got her sitting right here. We can talk to her. You know. You know. There's that.
There's that. Okay. So you just recently signed a deal with Rare Spark. Is that correct?
Yes.
Record label?
Media. Yeah.
Some big hitters. Scott Sherrod, he's been on our show a while back, but mm-hmm. You got some great people involved in this label. How different is, with everything that's changed in the business over the last several years, how different is this label model from maybe previous experiences?
It's quite different. You know, my first record deal was with Capitol Records mm-hmm. many moons ago. And it was a different time in the music business, in the country music business. And this project is more of an independent thing. Trying to think of the differences between these deals. You know, sometimes it's a financial thing is the difference.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
When you sign with a huge, huge company, it's just a whole different thing. And so we got together and decided that I would sort of revamp some of my Canadian project.
Oh, okay.
Because I've been doing a lot in Canada over the years, and I took a little time away.
Sure.
I have a little girl who's five now, so I've been doing the mommy thing, and I got married to Paul Jefferson, and we did a little project together actually as well. And then I thought, you know, I think I would like to get back on Canadian radio. So got together with this company, Rare Spark, and we did some recording and went back at it again, and by golly, I was back on the radio.
Nice.
I love
nice.
It.
Well, you mentioned the CanCon. Is that, am I saying that
yeah.
right? You actually, didn't you have like an interesting thing a few years ago where one of your songs, mm-hmm. you were having issues because they decided it wasn't Canadian enough? Talk about that.
That was my first single on Capitol, Give Me a Ring Sometime.
Yeah.
And it was written by two Canadians. Let me see. How did that work? Two Canadians and an American artist, I believe.
Right.
Or American writer, I'm trying to think. Anyways, so, and I'm Canadian, so that makes it partially CanCon. It's everything, every song is divided into four parts. Let's start there. Music, production, artist, songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
So, artist, I'm one part. Second part would be the writer. So, actually, that's what it was. It was two American writers and one Canadian
gotcha.
Writer.
Gotcha.
So, the one Canadian writer didn't fill the full part, which we thought it did. We thought that was good enough. And it was going great. It was going up the charts. I think it was number four on the Canadian charts. And then all of a sudden, overnight, it was off the chart.
Wow.
It was gone. It didn't even just gradually fall down. It was gone. Because somehow the CRTC, which is the government part of that, found mm-hmm. out that it was not CanCon, and it just got it stopped. So it was a bit of a strange thing, and it was like, what? Gee, you know, well, I was hoping you were playing it because you liked the song, you know. But anyways, it was a strange thing. I mean, I don't want to say anything bad about the Canadian content rules because they've been very helpful to me over the years as well. And it supports our Canadian artists who, without that, you know, we have a lot of American music on the airwaves up there too, which is awesome. But there's so many more American artists, and unfortunately, us Canadians would get lost in the shuffle if we didn't have that ruling.
Sure,
so
right.
Yeah.
So, well, was that it for that song, or did you guys
pretty
come,
much?
Okay,
it did get some airplay in the U.S. as well, and I did some touring with it.
But as far
it,
as Canada so goes,
that was
it.
Pretty much it. That's yeah, right. Yeah, that was it.
Wow,
it was a strange thing. Hmm. Yeah,
you said something interesting to Kathy is before we got on the show, is, and you guys were both kind of talking about as an independent, and with Capitol, there was probably a lot more people doing a lot more things for the product, mm-hmm. whereas now you're probably more involved in all right. aspects of it.
Yes, as an independent artist, the artist is definitely much more involved, which is great. I like having more control of what goes on and knowing what's happening. When I signed with Capitol, I was about 19. I was very young, and I didn't have a clue about anything. I mean, you know, I was 19 years old. I just come to Nashville, and I just wanted to sing. So there were a lot of people doing things. I didn't always know what was going on, which is not the best thing. I mean, it's good to have people to help you. You can't do everything as the artist. Otherwise, you
right.
know, your creativity.
There's no time
creativity,
for art.
Yeah,
right,
it goes
right.
out the window. So you need people to help you, but at the same time, you do need to know what's being done for you and how you're being represented.
Yeah.
Well, luckily, we are going to be abiding by that CanCon rule as well, because we'd like you to sing a song.
Okay.
You're Canadian. We got your Canadian guitar, so
yeah.
I think we've got our bases covered.
I think, yes,
yeah.
you got the one that I ordered, the Canadian special.
Right, right. The cord is from Paraguay, though, so I don't
yeah,
know.
So
oh,
that, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But we'd love to hear you play some.
Okay,
if
sure.
If you like it.
Well, okay.
If you don't mind getting from that cup.
Oh,
thanks.
Sure.
I would love to play a song for you. This was the latest single for me that was out in Canada. And wrote it with my good friend Fred Wilhelm. Hopefully, I don't know if he's listening. Maybe he is. And I really love this song. When I decided to do this project, I thought, okay, now I got to start writing songs. I got to get back to it. We got to figure out what's going to be the first single. And so I got together with Fred, and this was actually the first song we wrote.
Oh, wow.
For this project. And you'd think the first one would be, you know, just getting
yeah,
into it, throw
up.
It out.
Yeah.
And it stood the test of time, and here it is. I really love it, so. You haven't seen me in a while. I hate that I've been gone so long. There's been a lot of lonely miles along this crazy twisted road that I've been on. If I could be somebody else, had anything else that I could do, I'd never leave you by yourself. But I'm someone who's got to march to the beat of a backbeat drummer. Can't see a road sign without wondering where it's going. Going, the sound of the open road calls to me by my first name. You know I've tried, but I can't change. It's who I am. Love me if you can. Some say I'm just the girl next door, but I've kicked down every picket fence. No, I ain't easy, that's for sure. I need someone who's got to march to the beat of a backbeat drummer. Can't see a road sign without wondering where it's going. Going, the sound of the open road calls to me by my first name. You know I've tried, but I can't change. It's who I am. Love me if you can. I hope you can. I hope you can. March march to the beat of a backbeat drummer. Can't see a road sign without wondering where it's going. Oh, the road calls to me by my first name. You know I've tried, but I can't change. It's who I am. Oh, it's who I am. Love me if you can. Oh, let's go marching to the beat of a backbeat drummer. Who I am. Love me if you can. Love me if you can.
Ah, love that. Love that. So you just touched on this a minute ago, or we just touched on it a minute ago. During your career, you've had, you know, the usual series of labels closing and deals going away and coming, management changes, all that stuff. For the newer artists listening, how do you deal with all that? Any advice of anything you might have done differently looking back?
Oh, boy. You know, I've thought about that, and I think, what would I have done differently? And I don't know that there is anything. You know, this business is a crazy, crazy business, and we've all got to be a little bit crazy to get into it to begin with. Because if we weren't, we wouldn't bother. you know, right. It's so hard. But also, you know, I love to sing. I love the music. And I got my first deal with Capitol Records. That ended. You know, there's various different reasons that we really never actually figure out why. But all of a sudden, it's not happening anymore. Changed management, went on to, what was the next one? Sony Music. Got signed to Sony. Was there for a little while, did another album, and changed management again, and then I signed. Oh, then I did an independent record in between.
Right.
And that was great. My brother ended up, he started managing me at that point, and he got on board. And that was great, working with family, and he's a real smart guy. And so we did that. And then I signed with Curb Records, and that song Break It that you heard a little while ago, that was written after that deal. And I decided it was time to break it all down. You know, it's like, okay, how many more record deals before my head explodes? And yeah. Different publishing deals as a songwriter in between all of that. And the Curb record deal was not really working out either. So I thought, okay, it's time to take a break. Got off the road for a little while and spent a lot of time in the garden. It was really about, that's where I was at. I just needed to just chill out. And wrote that song, actually with Fred Wilhelm again, we wrote it, called Break It, about just sometimes you got to break it all down before you can build it back again and build it back better. And then I did another independent record, which my husband produced, Paul Jefferson. And then he and I did a project together as the Jeffersons.
Right.
Of course. And that's been really fun. That's kind of an ongoing, you know, thing that we're doing here and there. That's been really fun. And we did a Christmas album together. So, yeah. It's just been quite a ride. I look back and I think, wow, what a crazy life. But you know, I'm very blessed and fortunate to still be doing it. That's still how I make my living, and a lot of people don't get to keep on doing that.
So right.
I'm fortunate.
Good for you. And we were talking earlier about the whole CanCon world. The U.S. market seems pretty right now. Seems pretty locked up with really only three female solo
yeah.
artists with a number one in the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. How is the Canadian country music market different? Is it more inclusive right now? Or do you have more females out there, or is it similar?
You know what? We're pretty much in the same boat up there.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. When you look at the charts right now, pretty much the top 10 are all guys.
Okay.
And which is great. There's a lot of great Canadian music up there.
Sure.
A lot of awesome songs coming out, but it's kind of about the same climate as it is here
really?
In the U.S. and it's just been really tough for women. I don't quite understand it. I've heard thoughts and ideas of why that is. I don't buy all of them. They say that a lot of women like to listen to country music radio and they want to buy music from male artists.
Okay.
But I'm a woman and I listen to country music on the radio and I like to buy female artists.
Sure.
Records.
Yeah.
And what about pop music? It, sure. You know, what about all those females who are at the top of the charts? I don't think the women that listen to that are that much different. I think.
People just like good music, you know, and it doesn't matter who the artist
is. So, you know, it's the industry cycles. It goes in, you know, ups and downs. When I got started in the early 90s and got my first record deal, the females were on top. It was
Shania Twain.
It was Leanne Womack. It was, you know, all kinds of different. Faith Hill. And then it kind of cycled around to the guys, and it's always gone that way for some reason. It's just the way it is. So the girls will be back. They'll be back.
Good. Good. I miss them.
Yeah.
I miss them. Let's take a break. All right. We'll be back with more of Lisa Brokop. You're listening to the Music Row Show. By the way, before we do that, let's do a quick email or website plug.
LisaBrokop.com.
B-R-O-K-O-P.
Yeah, B-R-O-K-O-P. And I'm on Twitter and Facebook and all that stuff. So, and occasionally Instagram. Whoa. I just got, just getting on that. Yeah, crazy. I am really high tech.
Nice. We should talk. Yeah.
All right. You're listening to the Music Row Show. We'll be right back.
Oh, yeah, welcome back to the Music Row Show. That's Little Green Pacer, song by Lisa Brokop. And you were just telling us you wrote that with...
I wrote that with Mary Sue England.
Mary Sue England.
Just talking about
that.
And Jim Riley.
Nice. Yes. I like that song.
It's called Lime Green Pacer, actually.
Oh, Lime Green Pacer.
Very important part of the song. It's
that is true. Well, see, I can't read my own writing. That's
okay.
What that is.
Wow.
They are little, though.
Yeah, let me show her your writing, though.
It's pretty unintelligible, awesome. Even to me.
I saw white, green,
and
a part-time doctor.
Yeah.
So I have enjoyed anytime we get a guest on. I love spending hours on YouTube finding little things with people on it, and you especially. There was a great video of you doing a duet with Freddie Quinn in Germany.
Oh,
in Germany. And at the end, and Freddie Quinn's a big deal in Germany.
Yeah.
And at the end, you know.
That's Herr Quinn to you.
At the end, no, because at the end, the whole audience, and they're all very advanced in age, and they're all going, Freddie, Freddie, yeah. Freddie.
Oh, yeah, I was nothing. I was, you know, I was like shoved aside. Freddie, that was a strange little gig. It was at Whistler Ski Resort, which is just north of Vancouver, Canada. It's beautiful up there, super beautiful. And Freddie was there, and I guess at one time Freddie Quinn was very, very famous.
Oh, movies in Germany. He was like the did the movies where he'd sing in the movies.
Yeah. Like
Elvis.
Like Elvis.
He's, like you know,
Elvis. He thought he was Elvis.
Yeah.
I think.
He's right up there with David Hasselhoff, let me tell you.
Yeah.
The Hoff.
Yeah.
So, me and Freddie, we were, that's good. Yeah.
Well, it just made me think, because you've been performing live since you were 15. What are some of the oddest live performing situations you found yourself in?
Thanks for bringing that up. No,
I'm
it was
here for you.
It was a German television show that was filming it, so everybody there spoke German, and they had us. I guess we were lip syncing part of it, and they had us like kind of standing out in the middle of nowhere, and it was just very strange, the whole thing, and they wanted to dress up my band members in these strange clothing, and they were like, we're not wearing this. It was really funny. But actually, the song I sang with Freddie in the Blue Canadian Rockies, I love the song. It's super
right fun.
Did you have to sing it in German?
No.
Okay, good,
because that would have been the
that
end
would
of
have
that
been
show
really funny.
That would have been really funny. Yes.
Well, it was fun to watch anyway. Oh, I was thanks. Getting a kick at Freddie.
Oh, yeah. Man. Star. What did I know? Jeez.
So speaking of duets and duos, you mentioned earlier you do a project with your husband, the Jeffersons. You know, anybody who's married knows that that's, you know, it takes work to have a good marriage, and it also takes a lot of work to have a successful music career.
Yeah.
What happens when you put the two together? Any advice for those people out there with musical spouses?
Don't do it.
We love you, Paul. Really,
love
we
you,
do.
Paul. I know you're listening. I hope Ivy's gone to bed. But anyways, no, we're very lucky. We met Mary Sue. She keeps coming up. Mary Sue England, my best friend. She set me up with Paul. Her husband is a guitar player and was playing in Paul's band, Hilljack, at the time.
Okay.
And she's like, oh, you got to meet this guy. And so she said, well, set up a writing appointment. Nashville's a great way to... writing appointment. Yeah. So we got together and it was her and I and Paul and we wrote, I don't know what the song was we wrote. So it just kind of went from there, and then we had coffee at a Starbucks, and the Starbucks was the first place we met, and then we set up the writing appointment, blah, blah, blah. And so off we went, and so we've always been afraid of combining the music part with just being married, because we know that that can be really tough. It's tough enough to stay married and you know, get along.
Stay married.
Yeah. I mean, look at ABBA. Yeah. I mean, come on.
Yeah. So we're like, yeah, I don't know. We better not do too much singing together. And we actually don't write a lot together because we're at home, we're taking care of our child, and we just, you know, life gets in the way. But he came to a show of mine up in Canada, and he'd been to a few shows, and he was just kind of hanging out while I was doing a show. And it's like, hey, come on, get up and sing a song. And he got up and sang something with me at the end. And the people just went nuts. I mean, they just ate it up more than we ever could have imagined. And our harmony together just really gelled. And it was like, boy, that really is cool. Maybe we should do a little more of that. I mean, it really is cool.
That's great.
So we decided to put a record together. And it's been really fun. We've been doing a lot of shows, just he and I, just with our guitars, acoustic house concert type things, mm-hmm. where we go and I love the simplicity of it. We just go, we sing, you know, we know each other really well. So there's lots of banter back and forth, and Paul's an awesome songwriter. He's got a lot of hits that he plays. And so it's actually fun to sing a song and then sit back and let him sing one, take a little break and kind of watch the show for a second,
right.
And then get back into it. And it's been really good.
Nice.
I can imagine right now it would be hard to write together, though.
Yeah.
Because does everything kind of sound like, let it go, let it go.
Oh, my goodness. Can't hold it back anymore. Oh, my goodness. Yes, yeah. So my little girl is so into, she has the voice of Elsa, you know.
She does.
Yes. Nice.
Especially at that high note. Mm-hmm.
Hey.
Oh, I think there's a couple of cracks in the window.
Because of it.
Maybe because of that.
Wow.
Yeah. But she might be listening right now. She is a very good singer.
Good, good, good. Well, so we can't wait to hear you on the show, Ivy. But in the meantime, we're going to take a commercial break. And you're listening to the Music Row Show. We're here with Lisa Brokop. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Music Row Show. We're here with hit recording artist and songwriter Lisa Brokop, and that's a tune of hers called Shacking Up.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure this time.
I hope
you
don't.
Because I asked.
Yeah, okay, good, good, good. Hey, we're going to talk songwriting because you've written some great songs. Okay, so I am incapable of writing sweet romantic songs.
It's true.
Heino, you can't write, what is it?
I can't write songs where people die in them, which is what you said.
I specialize in that.
No,
seriously, you have some things that, you know, do you have some that are
I've got a couple sweet songs, yeah.
No. I'm asking if you have things that are harder for you to write.
Oh.
Never mind. You just sit back and relax. No. Lisa?
I have problems understanding questions.
Yeah,
that's what
clearly.
I have, yeah.
Cognitive issues. What are your most challenging types of songs, and how do you get past it? Is it a matter of finding the right co-writer? Or?
I find that the happy songs are hard to write.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, I mean, there's always stuff going on in life that you can grab from. And a lot of times it's emotional and it's hard stuff. And so it's always, for me, it's easier to go there and go with kind of the downer thing.
Uh-huh.
Rather than, let's write a happy song. Like, how many happy things? Like, happy, sunshine, smile, you know, there's not, I find there's less to go on, you know.
Well,
it's
don't
like
you find
ideas.
Yourself walking around when you see people smiling going, what are you even smiling about?
Some days,
what is
yes.
wrong with you?
Some days I want to hurt them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
There's
good.
A song right there.
Is that too much? Or,
there's
you know.
There's a happy
some
song.
Some days I want to hurt them.
Want to punch you in the throat. Just give it an up tempo.
Okay, maybe
that's
I
hit.
Went a little too far.
Yeah,
that's
sorry.
A hit.
Sorry.
Right there. Yeah. No, so that's interesting. So then how do you go? Because that's what radio wants. And radio wants those upbeat, happy songs.
Happy, up-tempo, drive time. Yeah.
Truck.
So maybe that's why I'm having so much trouble getting an airplane. No.
Uh-huh.
But I can write those. But I actually do it. I enjoy writing the more emotional stuff and stuff a little bit darker that may not necessarily be the top 10 radio song. Mm-hmm. But I do enjoy that.
Yeah.
Do enjoy that more.
Nice.
Well, you've had, as Scott mentioned earlier, you've had songs recorded by Reba and Pam Tillis, Terry Clark. How do you approach writing when it's meant for another artist versus for yourself? Or do you differentiate?
Well, those songs that got recorded, I wasn't writing, when they were written, I wasn't thinking, oh, I'm going to write this for another artist. And I got really lucky. And I never thought, you know, I always dreamed about coming to Nashville and being an artist. And I imagined that and singing, but I never dreamed about having another artist cut my own song. So that was really a big bonus for me. I had a publishing deal and I got this song recorded by Reba. It was called Secret. And it was an emotional one. And I loved the song, but I never imagined that it would actually get recorded. And then I heard her sing it and to hear her singing things that I had put into the demo or whatever that term, the demo.
Full band song presentation.
Yeah. To hear her singing some of my licks, it was just like, oh wow, that is just the coolest thing in the world.
That's awesome.
She's the queen. I mean, Reba is, she's the best.
Well, I'm torn. I want to keep talking, but I would love to hear one more song.
Oh, I'd love that. Yeah.
Okay.
Let's do that.
Sure. Well, I think I'm going to do a song I wrote with Jeff Ross, Jefferson Ross, he goes by. And you're trying to see my fingers, aren't you? He just moved my purse. We could see my
fingers.
So
I could see her hands.
Oh, no. Now
we
I'm
just
nervous.
Know you're going to start
now
swinging
I'm really
that guitar around.
I'm nervous. But we were sitting around one day, and it always amazes me how the ideas come and how they fall out of the sky sometimes and onto the paper. And we were talking about some of the old music, like Patsy Cline and Hank Sr. and Tammy Wynette, and how much we love that stuff. And I was thinking about how cool it would have been to be around in those days writing songs and pitching songs to those artists.
Yeah.
And so we thought, well, we can't go back in time, but we can pretend. And so we wrote this song that I think maybe could have been pitched to Patsy Cline back in the day. And it's one of my favorites. It's called Oh Careless Me. Oh careless me, I've gone and done it again. I just can't believe I threw better judgment to the wind. Now here I sit as black mascara runs down my cheek. Oh, foolish girl. Oh, careless me. What will I do now that he's gone? Like his cigarette, I just burn and linger on. Why do I still walk these halls? And why can't I sleep? Oh, foolish girl. Oh, careless me. Kiss of his cologne is still on my pillow. I should have known that he'd go. This always happens to me. Oh, careless me. I've gone and done it again. I just can't believe I threw better judgment to the wind. Now here I sit as black mascara runs down my cheek. Oh, foolish girl. Oh, careless me. Oh, foolish girl. Oh, careless me.
That is my new favorite song in the world.
And who says you can't write happy songs? Come on!
Yeah, that's pretty happy, right?
Yeah! Oh,
I don't know if you were listening, right?
I know. I was watching her hands.
Right.
Yeah, that was that happy?
That was happy.
That's gorgeous. I love that song.
Thanks, I love it too. It's one of my favorites. Man, I love the old style stuff.
So you and intern Peyton have the whole sing and swing in common.
Swing and swing?
Yeah. Swinging on your swing.
When we were little girls?
Yeah. Is Ivy showing the same sing and swing propensity?
You know, not really. We don't have a swing set in the backyard. Ooh. So it's not like, you know, when I was a kid, I had a swing set in the backyard.
Right.
So she has to go to the playground to do it. So and I haven't witnessed it as much. But it's pretty much sing and do everything else for her.
Yeah.
So, yes.
And if she decides to pursue music, what are you going to tell her?
We don't talk about music in our household.
Uh-huh.
We don't talk about it. No, just kidding. We keep talking doctor. We play tapes for her while she's sleeping, like that'll go into her mind.
Get a job with health insurance.
Medical school.
Take care of your parents. Good idea. Subliminal messages.
I like. Right. I'm gonna have to steal that one. Right. I like that.
Now chances are pretty good she's gonna want to do music of some sort. But,
all right.
But she's pretty smart, so you never know. You never know.
Well, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Timing.
That was awesome.
LisaBrokop.com
is the website. And shameless plug on 8/22 on August 20th. I'm sorry, October 20th.
No.
What month is it?
Let me do this.
It's August. August 22nd. Lisa and I and my wife and Paul, we're going to be playing the
Lisa,
Luger
this
together,
is a bad career move. Yeah. Let me tell you this right now.
You're going to regret that. But
August
22nd. August 22nd.
What does it matter? It's the Bluebird. It'll be sold out in six seconds.
That's right. That's right.
No, they're going to be there because of us, right?
That's exactly right. What I think. Absolutely. All right. Well, check out LisaBrokop.com, and we'll, of course, check out TheMusicRoadShow.com, and we'll see you next week.
By the way, we're at the Bluebird this Friday.
And
shameless plug, boy.
There you go. We'll see you next week on The Music Roadshow.